the truth. Truth.
Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. This is Patrick Slattery, and I advise everyone to go to republicbroadcasting.org and check it out and click on the donate button and send us some shekels, and to go to nationalbugle.com and look down the screen for the co-certified link, the co-certified app, and click on that and download the co-certified app. We'll be talking more about that as the week goes on. But today is Monday, and Monday is Mark Collette Day. Mark Collette, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. It's great to be here. How are you today?
I'm fine. I've got my lovely cup of tea. Do you have your Red Bull?
I have already had my Red Bull because I've just been to the gym. Today is arm and back day, so I certainly needed that extra caffeine boost to get the most out of it.
Okay, well, that's great. That's great. We have to get fit or stay fit, maintain ourselves. It's a big, hard struggle. There's a couple of stories I'm trying to follow. There's one on this caravan that we've talked about, these largely Hondurans who have been coming through Mexico for the past month or so, and a contingent of them, a few hundred actually, 200 or 300, arrived at the border crossing between Tijuana and San Diego, I believe yesterday, maybe the night before, and they've been, some of them have been scaling the wall, singing the Honduran national anthem and carrying a Honduran flag. Do these sound like refugees or invaders?
That does sound very odd. Also, to be a refugee, don't you have to be largely displaced from your sort of country of origin? What is the situation in Honduras? Is there a situation where there's a civil war? Is there any reason why these people would be coming to America other than seeking some kind of economic migrancy, is really the best way to put it? Because I know in the UK, we have a situation where we have all these immigrants literally lining up in Calais, and they are absolutely desperate to get across the English Channel. And you might think that's a very, very strange thing, because if they've already reached the safety of France, they're mm-hmm. already safe. Mm-hmm. They aren't having to, they are no longer having to, you know, dodge bullets or dodge missiles or escape Middle Eastern tyrants. They're already in France. So they've already achieved mm-hmm. safety. But no, they're desperate to get into the UK. And the reason for that is obviously because the UK offers them a much better deal. And I'm wondering, or it sounds very much to me, as if these Hondurans aren't actually fleeing any kind of hardship, but are just looking for a better life and all the benefits that come from, you know, migrating to the West and getting on kind of the liberal socialist bandwagon of handouts and a lifelong gravy train of getting the kind of benefits, the kind of welfare benefits that they wouldn't receive in their country of origin. But to actually be waving their own native flags, this suggests that they're not fleeing anything. These aren't people who are trying to escape a government that's oppressing them. They're proud to be Hondurans. They just want to be Hondurans living in the USA, importing their own culture, importing their own people, creating their own Honduran community that is actually paid for and funded by the American taxpayer. So essentially, they're bringing Honduras to America, and essentially, they'd be paid to do so by the taxpayer, which is absolutely shocking. But it's no different to what happens all over Europe, especially here in the UK.
Well, indeed. So they're coming to, I guess, you know, there's one of the American states is New Mexico. But, you know, a lot of the United States has become, in effect, a New Mexico, and some maybe a new Honduras. With the capital at New Tegucigalpa, or whatever it's called, Tegucigalpa. Here's the thing: as is the case with these, with the jungle in Calais, these Africans and Muslims who are trying to hitch rides across the Channel to get to Great Britain from the safety of France, these people have gone through 1,000 miles or over 1,000 miles of Mexico. There's no civil war in Mexico. They're not fleeing the bloody Mexican Civil War. Mexico doesn't even have a border with Honduras. They had to go through the relative safety of Guatemala. Honduras, what's going on in Honduras? Well, there are gangs there. Well, guess what? When the Central and the Latin Americans come to Texas and California, they create gangs here too. Some of our worst gangs are these Central American gangs. And who do they prey on? Actually, they prey on the Central Americans who come here. So if they think the notion that they're coming here to escape gangs is ludicrous. There was apparently a presidential election in Honduras not too long ago, and some of the people who supported the candidate who lost feel like they want to leave the country. Well, I've heard some of Hillary's supporters say they want to leave the country. And actually, maybe we could work out a deal. Maybe Donald Trump could work out a deal, because as much as I don't want these people to come here, it might be worth a trade with some of the people who voted for Hillary, get rid of them. I don't know. Maybe we could work out something. But of course, they're coming here. They what can they bring? They can bring the ability to displace our own construction workers. Construction work used to be a job that paid well for American men who didn't have college degrees. Sometimes they did have college degrees, but it paid well. It doesn't pay so well anymore because you've got Jose and Alberto, and they're willing to work on the roof for minimum wage or sub-minimum wage, put in a new roof, put in new drywall. So they're displacing workers. And, of course, they have their large families that go to the public schools, and they add to the cost of the public schools because it requires all sorts of bilingual and special education. And the health care, you know, a extremely high proportion of the people from Latin America, much higher than, like, I think among the American general public, it might be something like 10% of people are diabetic or pre-diabetic. And among the Central Americans, it's more like 40%. It's just through the roof. And this is something that's extremely burdensome to the healthcare system, because it's something that, if treated, you have to treat it for a lifetime, and it's expensive to treat. And if untreated, then you die a slow and expensive death. Either way, it's very expensive. So that's guess who's coming to dinner.
Well, I completely agree with you about the construction trade. We here in the UK have been hit really hard in terms of nurses, actually, because what we've seen is the government is refusing to pay nurses a decent wage. So instead of having British nurses who can speak the language, who can do the job properly, they employ these cheap third world nurses. And unfortunately, and this isn't being rude, they can't speak the language. Now, if you're in a situation where you're meant to be saving lives, one major barrier to saving lives is, of course, the language barrier. If you can't speak to the person who you're caring for, how on earth can you possibly hope to be of any service to them? You know, it's a very serious matter, and there's been cases where people have died in British hospitals because of this. And I personally find that quite sickening, that political correctness, multiculturalism, and the drive for the government to pay ever cheaper wages is what is actually leading to people dying now in hospitals because of this. And I actually knew a girl, she's a very close friend of mine for quite a while, and she worked as a nurse in a very large hospital. Actually, I'm not going to say where because I wouldn't want anything to lead back to her, but she told me of several cases where nurses had to be sort of, you know, removed because people had died on their watch because they couldn't articulate what was wrong with them, and in some cases had been given the wrong medicines or the wrong treatment for their ailments because the nurses couldn't speak English. It's absolutely appalling. This is hitting us at every level. Yet if you say something like this in the UK, people will say, oh, but the NHS wouldn't even run if it wasn't for immigrant nurses. No, it's not running because of immigrants. What we need in the West is to stop these people coming in and to ensure that low-paid jobs are no longer low-paid jobs, because low-paid jobs can only be low-paid jobs when you have an open labour market that can suck in labour from all over the world, where a British or American low-paid job is a well-paid job. What we need is closed borders and a closed labour market. So if people refuse to do jobs which aren't being paid fairly, employers actually have to pay the indigenous people or the people who are the descendants of those who founded the nation in the case of America. They have to pay them a fair wage. And that makes economic sense. It does not make economic sense to undercut your own people's wages so a few super rich sort of oligarchs or business owners can benefit and have a couple of extra bottles of champagne. That is not economic sense. And that doesn't work for the majority.
Mm-hmm. There's another issue that I've been watching, and a few hours ago, there had been some sort of announcement that Benjamin Netanyahu was about to go on television. I think he was due to go on television at 5 p.m. British time. What time is it over there, Mark?
The time is 6:13.
Okay. And I have not seen the news of what his important announcement was supposed to be. I'm at the Jewish Telegraphic Agency website right now. I don't see it, so we'll keep you updated on that. But what we do know is that there has been this dramatic upswing in Israeli violations of Syrian territorial sovereignty. They've been bombarding Syria. There have been very large explosions in Syria. The Israelis, they're very, very cute. They're allowed just to say, oh, we refuse to comment on whether we did or whether we didn't. And that goes to their extensive nuclear arsenal, which they're cute. They can just say, oh, well, we never say whether we have it or we don't. Everybody knows that they've had it for the past 50 years. It's also very noteworthy that our brand new Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, who I believe took office either on Thursday or Friday of last week, guess where he is?
Is he in Israel right now?
He's in Israel, straight to Israel, meeting with Bibi Netanyahu. The top story from about 40 minutes ago on the Jewish Telegraphic Agency website is Mike Pompeo rejects Jordanian assertion that Israeli-Palestinian conflict is the main cause of Mideast instability. No, it's, I guess it's Arab hatred of yarmulkes or head coverings. I don't know what it is, but you know, we didn't elect Donald Trump for this, but we are getting it. And I don't think that this was part of some grand plan. I know some people out there do. I think that Donald Trump ran and was probably intending to try to carry out his program. And I think things are a lot more difficult than he expected. And maybe he's a lot less skillful than we had hoped. So he's not having a lot of luck protecting the border, and he's getting dragged. He may get dragged into this kind of Middle East war. We'll see. But I suppose you haven't heard anything about Bibi Netanyahu's speech.
I haven't. And to say that Donald Trump is a lot less skillful than we'd hope for, I think that's a bit of an understatement, to be honest. He is.
I am known for my understatement.
That is a definite understatement. I mean, I would say that he has been a disappointment. You know, we all had high hopes for the guy, but he has been a disappointment. And, you know, I think that one thing that categorizes the alt-right or nationalists is we tend to be quite honest. And one thing that can be said for that honesty is that ultimately we as people, we don't stick with things if they're not working. You know, we give people a fair shake, but if it's not working, then we don't stick with it. We're not people who just keep saying, oh, it is, it's working. We must keep our support for these people. I don't think we do that. And I think that's a really good trait, to be honest, because I've seen a lot of conservatives who are still trying to somehow claim that the Trump regime has been absolutely wonderful, that the Trump regime has been, you know, almost faultless. And that just isn't the case. You know, his biggest promise was a wall, and he's failed on that so far. His other big promise was that he was going to stop people coming in from these hostile Islamic nations. Now, he's been held up on that despite trying to push it through. He seemed to let us down over DACA, but some people claim he was playing a very clever game. But a place where he has definitely let us down, he's definitely failed everyone, is in the Middle East. He came over as a candidate of peace. He wanted American troops out of the Middle East. He didn't want us to be embroiled in any more Western incursions into Middle Eastern countries. And since he's been in office, he's disappointed time and time again on those issues. And I would look at him and I would genuinely say that the man has been an abject disappointment. He has been someone who has failed on those fronts, and that's just a sad matter of fact now. And there's no real two ways to put it. And I definitely think that when people saw him coming in, you know, President Obama was no friend of ours by a long shot, but he seemed to have done more than a lot of presidents to actually stand up against some of the worst excesses of the Israeli government. But Donald Trump just seems to be going totally back on that. It's almost like people have elected Donald Trump, but what they've got is Jared Kushner and Ivanka. Is it Ivanka? Via the back door. And these two seem to have been relentlessly pressuring him to keep going into these Middle Eastern Middle Eastern quagmire, and it's not helping anyone, and it's certainly not going to help him get reelected.
Okay, well, we'll be coming up on the break, and I'll give my take on what's going on. It's similar to yours, but I've got, you know, maybe some other perspectives as well. So we'll be back after the break with more from Mark Collette on National Bugle Radio. Okay. I'm assuming, I didn't hear the music, I'm assuming it played. Usually starts coming on at about that time. And I'm assuming that we're not being heard right now, but in case we are being heard, let's not talk about all of our secret illegal plans and dealings.
I actually hope we are being heard now. That's quite funny. Yes. Yeah, sometimes the music plays for me, and then sometimes it's just dead, and I'm not sure what the case is.
Oh, dear. Okay. It's good that we didn't. We are still on the air. I don't know if you heard that, Mark. My engineer just came on, Mr. T. Mr. T's having trouble with his thumbs because he doesn't have any. We are still on the air, so it's a good thing we didn't talk about all our secret illegal dealings. Okay. Well, that's convenient. So what I was going to say about Trump is, we do have 33 months left in his term. He may wind up being impeached or assassinated. You never know. I'm not looking forward to any of those. He's assuming he's going to be president for 33 more months. And just looking at the political landscape, even though I don't want people to think I'm like, there are MAGA people who are going to support Trump no matter what. For me right now, the issue isn't supporting Trump or not supporting Trump. The issue is that if we want to get the government, if we want to get any government policies that we're pushing for, he's the most likely avenue. But we have to make him do it, and it's not going to be easy. It's going to be a lot harder than we would have hoped. I'm disappointed in Trump. I am somewhat surprised as a political scientist at how far the media and the judiciary and I guess other political forces in the country, at academia, how far they've gone, how pushed on against Trump, you know, with the judiciary just striking down his actions willy-nilly, things that are clearly what he's, you know, some of his executive orders clearly constitutional, and they're striking it down because they think there's no consequence. I've been very disappointed that you haven't had some people, like on the principled anti-war left, and there is a principled anti-war left, that some of those people haven't at least made tactical alliances with the Trump administration or people like us. That's been almost completely lacking. You'll have Glenn Greenwald, a left-wing journalist, and he'll go on Tucker's show. And so you get a little tiny bit of it. But there should be these tactical alliances on specific issues, even if they want to continue to hate Trump because he wants to have borders, for instance. But still, war and peace is a pretty big issue. I've been kind of surprised at that, and as far as Israel goes, I've said from the beginning, I haven't been surprised at Trump being, say, moving the embassy. I've thought from the beginning that his own divide and conquer strategy against his Jewish opponents was to divide the hardcore pro-Israel Zionists from the more secular American Jews who think that pushing too hard on for overtly pro-Israel policies is inviting trouble and would rather concentrate on transforming the demographics of the United States. So I think he did some divide and conquer. I think he might have been able to get away with withdrawing troops from the Middle East and letting Russia and Syria win the Syrian war in exchange, and still could have retained a certain amount of support from, you know, at least a small section of the Jewish population by moving the embassy, for instance, and by having a friendlier relationship with Bibi than Obama's. And of course, I also thought he was playing footsie with the Wall Street Jews. So certain things haven't surprised me, but certain things have surprised me. And like I said, I've been surprised at all the shenanigans that began with the attempt to bribe Electoral College members into not voting for him. And then I've been surprised at how far the court has gone. And, I'm going to turn the floor back over to you. I do have more to say about the courts. I think really what we need to start pushing for is impeaching these judges, because that is the check on the courts. One of the checks on the courts set up by the Constitution, the checks and balance system, was that the judges could be impeached by Congress. You know, the president appoints them. That's his check. And if they're already appointed, there's not a whole lot the president can do. There may be certain things, but the impeachment. But anyway, before I lecture too long, I want to hand this back over to you, Mark.
Well, yes, I think with Donald Trump, firstly, I'm very much in the same vein as you in that I don't believe this was some big master plan. I think the thing with Trump is he was kind of a little bit like a force of nature. And the problem with that is when the wind's blowing in your direction, it's fantastic and nothing can stop it. But equally, when it changes direction by its own volition, there's nothing you can really do then. And you're just as sort of screwed as your opponents were when the wind was blowing in the wrong direction for them. And I think with Donald Trump, he is kind of a little bit uncontrollable. You're not really sure what he's going to do. But also, with his own unpredictability, he doesn't really seem to stay too focused on anything for too long a time. Mm-hmm. For example, like I said, he was all for the wall. Now, the wall was a very unpredictable thing to call for, in the sense that no other politician would have called for it. And that in itself was like a force of nature, because the power behind those calls and the way it sort of rallied the public to his side was incredible. And that was something that I think for as long as we live, we probably won't see a major election winner anywhere in the Western world really get everyone behind them, all chanting something like build the wall again. I mean, it really was iconic. And in doing so, it fulfilled sort of two very important parts of what makes good propaganda. You see, what makes good propaganda is, firstly, the fact that it pleases your own supporters, so you get a big buzz for that. And secondly, when you do a good piece of propaganda, when you produce a good piece of propaganda, it also annoys your enemy. So it has this dual effect of, on one hand, it really, really pleases your own people, but on the other hand, it really, really annoys the people that you, don't like. And the sort of resultant sort of noise that policy makes then is far greater. And what I mean by noise is, if you imagine you've got two sets of crowing birds, and when you please one, that set of birds crows, and when you annoy the other set of birds, that set of birds crows. Now, if you do something at the same time simultaneously pleases one and annoys the other, the noise created is such an incredible din that everyone has to pay attention. And Donald Trump did that rather wonderfully.
Okay, well, I am hearing our music this time, which means we will have an opportunity to talk about our various illegal plans. So we will be back after the break with more from Mark Collette.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Back to the show, National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. And during the break, Mark Collette and I, we've worked out all of our nefarious plans. So I think, Mark, you have been talking about Donald Trump as a force of nature.
Yeah, so when the wind's blowing in your direction, it's great, but when it's not blowing in your direction, it's not so good. And when Donald Trump was doing the things we liked, it was wonderful, and no one could stop him. The left couldn't, and we tried to harness his energy. Now he's doing things we don't like. Unfortunately, we can't do much to stop him. And he just sets himself on a path, and he carries on. And he's very unpredictable. It's almost like he's unharnessable in the long run. And when I say he's like a force of nature, that also presents another problem for us. And for him, really. More for him than for us. And that is, he doesn't actually find it very easy to make friends or make allies. He doesn't find it easy. to, because he is a force of nature, because he isn't like a normal human, he doesn't find it easy to create a team around him, because he's so unpredictable, he's so strong-headed, and when he goes off on one, that's it. You're either with him and you're riding that wave, your boat's bobbing forward in the sea as quick as it can because you've got his wind in your sails, or you're sat in the doldrums because he's blowing in the wrong direction. There's nothing you can do. And that's why, unfortunately, he hasn't built any real political allies. Now, the problem with politics is you need a cohesive, strong team around yourself. For example, me and you, how long have we known each other now, Patrick? Just before Brexit was when we were introduced to each other?
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
so that, what was that? That was 2016. Now, I've known David Duke, since I think about 2006 is when I first met him. Now, you've known David for quite a long time, haven't you?
It's since 2012.
Yeah, so I mean, I've collaborated with David on a number of projects. You've collaborated on a number of projects. So I've known David for about 11 years. I've been working with him for the past 2 years. You've been known him since 2012. You've probably been working closely with him longer than I have. And you and I have been working with each other for the last year and a bit, you know, sort of 18 months. Now, interestingly, we've probably been working together closely for a longer period of time than Donald Trump has really with any of his team who are outside his own immediate family, who you by default have been working with since they were born or you were born. So, and that's a very worrying thing, because very much like the force of nature analogy, his forces of nature are often unstable. And Donald Trump has that instability because he has no real support. He has no real allies. And because he's constantly changing direction, he's unreasonable. You can't harness his strength. You can't, you know, control him fully. And because of all of these things, he is just too much to deal with. So whilst he has brought us some very good benefits, he's also brought us some negatives. And in the long term, you just don't know how he's going to turn out. You don't know what he's going to do next. Like on a day-to-day basis, just reading his Twitter is like a roller coaster ride of madness some days. And sometimes that works out wonderfully, like almost pressuring, you know, he played a huge part in pressuring North Korea into these historic peace talks. But then other times, you see him at the throat of Vladimir Putin, and he ends up sort of half backing down, making a bit of a fool of himself, and it doesn't really pay off. And because of this, you're never quite sure where you're going to go. And really, although the roller coaster ride with Donald Trump has been quite fun and in some ways quite exhilarating and brought us a lot of benefits, I'm not really sure if it's going to pay off in the long term. And one thing I am sure of is it's certainly not going to pay off in terms of America's role in the Middle East. And as day by day goes by, I can actually see the Donald Trump force of nature really going off in the wrong direction when it comes to Middle Eastern policy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Donald Trump, he was elected, he was an insurgent. He did not have a political party. You could say he hijacked the Republican Party, but he didn't really even hijack the Republican Party. He hijacked the Republican National Convention, the Republican nominating process. But even in hijacking the convention, you know, they do draft they draft a platform, but the party system in the United States is very different from in the UK or most other countries. The parties have very, very little power. Really, all that they do is they have a role in ballot access, in being a venue for candidates, but they have very little power over the people that they elect or that they help get elected. You know, there's a certain amount of money that goes through parties, but really parties have very, very little power, and you can't really even compare the Democrats or the Republicans to, say, the Labor Party or the, you know, conservatives or parties in other countries. You just can't. And so he doesn't have a party. And he was in a very different world. He was in the world of entertainment and real estate. And so the connections he had there were not the type of people who, for the most part, could come in and run government. And so he did need to have people. I mean, it would be great if he had called me up and I could be a policy advisor. But, you know, have I ever run a bureaucracy with tens of thousands of people working for it? No, I've run very small operations, but I've never run anything big. So they made a decision shortly after winning this election, which, frankly, they didn't seem to expect to win. And according to Steve Bannon, they just decided, okay, we'll try to govern as establishment Republicans. Now, the establishment Republicans really weren't for him, and many of them had tried to block his election as recently as October, just a few weeks before when the Access Hollywood tape came out, and you saw how many tried to abandon ship and call for him to step aside and let Pence be the candidate. And so that decision was made. You know, maybe he could have tried to reach out to at least one or two Democrats who might have been willing to cooperate with him more. I mean, you did see Tulsi Gabbard, a Democratic congresswoman from Hawaii, did visit Trump Tower, but she didn't get any kind of job offer. And I don't know if he really could have offered her anything. Eric Stryker and I were pushing for her to be Secretary of State. And but at any rate, I don't know how much he could have reached out to those very, very few Democrats. And the Democrats have just been, they've been more obstructionist with him than they ever were with Bush or Reagan or anyone else. I never recall this level of obstruction. And, you know, there are people who are like what you would call paleo conservatives. But that movement was the Republican Party and the Republican establishment really got taken over by what you would call neoconservatives maybe 30 years ago. And there just aren't very many paleo conservatives left who have any name, any stature. You know, you have some people like Pat Buchanan, he's in his 80s, Paul Craig Roberts, who was an official in the Reagan administration, but that was 30 years ago. And he's probably well into his 70s. He didn't really have a cadre to draw on. And so exactly what you're saying, he's bringing in these people who has no relationship with, many of whom have their own ambitions, like Nikki Haley obviously does, and probably Mike Pompeo does. And, you know, the people who supported him the most strongly were people like us, but we're not acceptable in polite company. And, you know, it's hard to move from being political dissidents to, you know, people who would be accepted in the establishment. It's hard to do that in a few years. But, you know, we've got to scratch our way into, I won't use the word mainstream, but the discourse, popular discourse. And, you know, our stormtroopers breaking down some of the barriers have been people like Andrew Anglin or like the people on the Right Stuff radio. But they've done this with rhetoric that is really not acceptable to the mainstream. It may well have had to be done. But it's important now to build up narratives that are appealing, that are appealing and are acceptable to without compromising on principles and on issues, but just in rhetoric, in terms of rhetoric, that are acceptable. And that's, you know, I know we're trying to do that. And I've talked to Richard Spencer. I'm not close to him, but I've talked to him. He has a National Policy Institute, but, you know, they've been using it for more as a media outlet than a policy, more as a media outlet than a think tank. And you know, we've had a couple conversations about trying to get more policy out, and I know he wants to do it, but of course, everybody is. I mean, we're just all flying by the seat of our pants, and there's all of the finance issues, the deplatforming issues. So it's tough. But I know, Mark, you over in Britain, you've had your experience with the national. I'm sorry, the name of your party. What was the name of your party?
The name of my party? Oh, when back
that
in the
you
day.
You were involved in.
Yeah, the British National Party.
The British National Party, the BNP.
Yes.
And so, you know, you've got experience, practical experience with electoral politics and doing the
10 years of it.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's the challenge for Trump is not having a cadre of people who share the goals stated in his election campaign. I mean, it's just not it, that cadre of people that is currently considered acceptable and that would have any experience running large bureaucracies. It's just not out there. And so this isn't to make excuses for Trump, but it's just, you know, we've got to try to figure out a way of getting him, you know, either making ourselves acceptable, which is hardly a short-term project, or trying to get him connected with people who at least share certain elements of his stated agenda to work with him tactically. So, I mean, do you have any thoughts, any suggestions?
Well, for me, I think to get things done in politics, you do need to build a team around yourself. You know, there's this belief in the greatness of an individual, that one man can change the world, but that's just not the case. One man might be at the front of a movement that changes the world. One man might inspire a huge number of people that go on to change the world. But no man is a comic book superhero. No man is made of iron and flies through the sky like Superman and, you know, faster than a speeding bullet. You know, that's just not how it is. Every man who goes on to define a movement, who goes on to build something that actually lasts and has a lasting impact, does so because they have a strong team of people around them who ultimately put their will into action. That's how things work. You know, one man might be the focal point. He might be the inspiration. He might be a great orator. He might be someone who inspires, you know, millions of people into following him. But to actually marshal those people and to harness that energy of all of those willing followers, he needs a team of people who are talented, who are cohesive, who are strong, who help him, who actually give him good advice. And no one's perfect. That team of people needs to almost be like a hammer and a chisel and to, you know, knock off the rough edges, to take away the sharp points, to get the man at the center into a chiseled and defined and perfect version of himself. And unfortunately, Donald Trump doesn't seem to have that strong team around himself. And he also doesn't seem to have very much loyalty to the people around him. He's too eager just to sack them, to throw them to the wayside. Now, obviously, one of the biggest instances of that was with Steve Bannon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't like the treatment of Steve Bannon. And there were other instances of that with people he appointed. And there's also been several high-profile embarrassments. There was that guy from, I believe he was from somewhere like the Bronx, who was quite a big mouth. He was quite slick-looking. He would look great in
Scaramucci.
Sort of, yeah, that was the one.
Scaramucci.
And it was all very, very it's all been very ragtag, very crazy. And one thing I noted about the BNP when I was in the BNP was the branches, the groups, the regions that did well, the ones that actually advanced, they did so because they worked together well, because there were people that had been around for years that trained up people who were new, that formed cohesive teams, and those people worked together like a machine. When the BNP fell to pieces is when it lost trust, was when it started firing people and everyone fell out and they drifted apart. And Trump is constantly fighting that sort of battle of attrition. He's constantly falling out with people, and it means there's not that stability there. And although he is president, which is a wonderful achievement, you know, you can't knock any of that, it's not just becoming president that matters. It's what you do as president. And a lot of people will rightly say, well, Mark, you're never going to be president. You're never going to be prime minister. You're never going to have that level of power. So, you know, what are you talking about? No, I'm not. But I can see from the outside looking in that it's not just about attaining power. It's what you do when you've attained that power. It's all well and good getting your hands on power, but then you have to direct that. You have to mold and shape the nation. You have to do things that are going to leave a lasting impact. Because if you don't, there was no point you ever getting to that position. And my sort of worry now is that Donald Trump will have got there, he'll be a one-term president, and literally everything that
leave no positive legacy. We'll be back right after the break to wrap up the show.
If your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network.
Welcome back to the show. National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, sponsored by CoSertified, so go check out that app. Well, Mark, I think you had a little bit more to say about Donald Trump and what you're expecting from him or what he could do.
Yeah, I was saying that it's not just about getting to power. It's about what you do when you're in power. It's about the lasting impact of you getting to power. And my big worry with Donald Trump is he will have no lasting positive impact. And in fact, he might have a negative lasting impact. He might be the one radical that gets in, and he might be the very motivator that makes the system or the left say, we must shore this up completely so this can never happen again. And my big worry is that if he doesn't do anything positive, he fails to build the wall, he fails to get his immigration ban in, he carries on with his destructive policies in the Middle East, he's going to leave the big silent majority, those who came out of the woodwork and supported him, those whites who started to think tribally for the first time in generations, he's going to leave them very depressed. And this was something we saw in the BNP. When we used to stand, you would have a turnout of maybe 35% in a council election. When we'd stand, and the turnout would jump sometimes up above 50%. And you'd be like, where are all these people coming from? Well, there were people who had lost faith in the system. And when we started working hard, they had a bit of faith again. And they started voting, this time for us. But one thing we noticed was, if we failed them, if we got somebody elected and that someone was a failure or didn't do well or didn't actually make any changes and didn't work hard, unfortunately, we would end up seeing those people who had come out and gained faith take such a hard knock, that was it. That was their last, you know, that was their last roll of the dice. They'd never, ever vote again, because we'd got them back off the bench. And when they'd seen that it hadn't worked out, they were like, well, that was it. That was my last chance saloon. I'm out of politics for good. And my big worry is that if Donald Trump does fail, he will then end up being a roadblock to any other genuine radicals who want to stand. He will redouble the left's efforts to ensure their candidate always gets elected, and he will demoralize those beyond what we can comprehend who he before brought back off the bench. And that's my big worry, that he might end up now being a net negative and leaving people very demoralized and ensuring that ultimately people will never have faith in someone who starts talking about being against the system. Because people will just say, well, we thought Trump was different, but nothing changed. You know, ultimately, they're all the same. And that would set us back years. Do you have any thoughts on that, Patrick? I think I'm either talking.
I had my mute on, yeah. I think that's very possible. And I think it ultimately is going to hinge largely on what we do. I think amongst ourselves, we can complain about them all we want. When I'm out in normie land, I'll say, look, I don't like most of the decisions he's made or most of the things he's done, but I'm glad he's president, and I defend him against those who try to destroy him.
Well, thank you for having me, Patrick, and I'll see you on Wednesday for my show and then again on Monday.
That's right, and on Friday for the David Duke Show. Okay, well, that's it for today. I will be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.